Welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words. I am your co-host, Judy Alexander, and I'm here with my husband, Dr. Bruce Chalmer.
Hello, Judy. Hello, viewers and listeners. And our topic for today is?
Helping couples deal with infertility, an interview with Rena Gower.
And if you have any experience with infertility or know folks who do, our conversation with Rena, I think, will be very helpful to you. She is a go-to person. She's a social worker who helps couples dealing
with
all aspects.
And herself has been through the process.
Yeah, she's very knowledgeable through her own experience
and
a delightful person.
And yes.
We enjoyed the conversation. Before we send you to that, let us put in some plugs for our products. Let's start with the books
I wrote. Yes. So the first one that started this podcast is Reigniting the Spark, Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back.
Indeed. That's been available now for three and a half years as of this recording.
Right. And your latest one is It's Not About Communication, Why Everything You Know About Couples Therapy Is Wrong.
And both of those are available in any of your favorite formats. You can get it in paperback, you can get it for Kindle on the Amazon site, and you can get it as an audiobook where I did the narration.
Mm-hmm.
Also, if you go to our website, ctn7.com, which you will see floating above our heads when I edit this video. If you're watching, good
and
point.
And if you're listening, ctn7.com.
CT as in couples therapy in 7, right? Mm-hmm. ctn7.com. When you go there, you will see a box appear that lets you sign up for Dr. Chalmers' newsletter, which is about roughly monthly. I've been doing it. And just sort of full of I think, interesting and fun stuff. I had a really interesting recent back and forth with one of our subscribers. It was very helpful and very thoughtful really enjoyed that. So do sign up for that. And when you do that, you will get free of charge a PDF of the book that Judy is holding up in paperback right now. You won't get the paperback, but you'll get the PDF. It is
7 Words to Jumpstart Your Love Life.
Yes, it is a booklet. That's, you know, it's not a big book, but
right.
You can buy it on Amazon. You can buy the audiobook there on Amazon as well. But if you sign up for my newsletter, you will get it, a PDF for free.
It's under 50 pages, and
yep.
It's a nice, concise read.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So please do that.
Right.
Let's put in a word for our sponsor.
And that would be The Blue Tent, Erotic Tales from the Bible by Laria Zilber.
And let me spell out for people who are just doing the audio, that's lariazilber.com. That's her website, LariaZylber, lariazilber.com. Laria has written a beautiful set of stories, erotic stories. They are quite explicit, so if you're into explicit erotica, this is for you, that are also deeply steeped in the Bible. So if you're into that, we invite you to support our sponsor. And also, I will note, if you go to lariazilber.com, you can see interviews with Laria herself.
That's true.
And when you do that, that will answer some questions for you about, gee, I wonder who that's a pseudonym for. So I'm just going to plant that seed, and people can go check out lariazilber.com and see the answer to that question. I wonder who she is. You'll find out. So, on that note, let's go to our interview, and we will see you on the other side.
Our guest today is Rena Gower. Rena is a clinical social worker with a private practice that focuses on helping people going through or considering fertility treatment, people who have experienced pregnancy loss, people who are unable to have children, and people who are considering a donor, adoption, or surrogacy. Rena brings both personal and professional experience to her work with clients. She approaches her clients from a strengths perspective and helps them work to find resilience and courage to carry on. Outside of her private practice, Rena is the director of social work services at Reproductive Medicine Associates of New York. She is the founder and co-host of Fertility Forward, a podcast dedicated to bringing listeners cutting-edge and accurate information on different aspects of the fertility space. She is also the author of Fertility 101.
Infertility 101.
Thank you.
Yeah.
She is also the author of Infertility 101, a quick and concise guide available on Amazon. Rena resides in New York City with her daughter and consults with patients virtually all over the world. Rena, welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words.
Oh, well, thank you. It is such a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's great to have you. So tell us about how you got into the work you do. Tell us something about your own journey into this.
Sure. Well, like so many, both women and men in the space, I got into it because of my own experience to have my daughter, who is almost 7. I went through about 2 years of fertility treatment to have her, and it just totally changed me personally and professionally. So when I was in it, I always said, you know, when I'm on the other side of this, I want to help other people so that they don't have to go through what I'm going through. And so after she was born, that's what I did. And I started to specialize in the space.
Mm, wow. And when you say specialized in the space, as a therapist myself, I'm curious, how did you find your way into that particular niche? And, you know, how did you do that? How did you get the word out? And also, you know, tell us some more about like what kind of situations you deal with.
Sure. So while I was going through treatment, I always sort of say I spent the first year being really alone and isolated. Then the second year, I kind of picked myself up. I started getting really involved with Resolve, which is the National Infertility Organization. I started doing advocacy work for them, lobbying in Albany. New York was undergoing, we were fighting for insurance reform at the time, and a couple of different laws. So I started getting involved with Resolve and volunteering with them, started just making connections, networking. And then after Sari, my daughter, was born, I literally blind emailed all of the clinics in the New York area and said, hey, you should have this person on your staff, and this is why. Just sort of info at, you know, HR, whatever, sent them out into the universe. And then the stars aligned, and RMA, the clinic that picked me up, you know, they really believed in what I was pitching. And so it started as a part-time job, and then it grew from there. And about 6 years later, now we have a podcast, I have a book, I have, you know, sort of a social work department over there. And it's kind of just grown organically, and they've been super supportive.
So you deal with a lot of couples or singles going through this. Is there some type of, I don't want to say, I'm sure every case is individual, but what does it do? What kind of stresses does this put on a couple's relationship?
Sure. Well, so they say that the stress of infertility is the same as cancer or heart disease. Mm-hmm. So it's super high. And I think, you know, unfortunately, our society just hasn't caught up with what it means to have infertility. I think we're very behind, you know, whatever, 20 years ago, cancer was the C word, you know, it was whispered. And it was sort of private and hush-hush. Now, of course, we all know what cancer is, and we all know that's super stressful. I think infertility, we're behind in that. Although there's so many people in the space, we're raising our voices to bring awareness to what that is. But, you know, and you work with couples, and you know sort of, I'm sure, about the executive system and couples dynamics. And, you know, when one person is undergoing a health scare or health issue, that really impacts the dynamic, because that means one person is, quote unquote, sick. And then the other person often feels helpless. Mm-hmm. And so often in couples, you know, the person who's not using their body for treatment often feels really, they both feel out of control, but in different ways. So generally speaking, the person who's using their body for treatment, you know, they're injecting themselves, they're undergoing procedures, maybe they have to do surgery, whatever invasive processes they have to do, can often feel super alone in that, and that their partner's not supporting them. But then the partner can feel very helpless, because they can't often sub in their body and say, okay, you got this, next month, I'll do it. I'll take one for the team.
Yeah.
So I work with them a lot to sort of how to balance that and how to help them understand each other's perspective and how to both feel involved in the process.
Mm. Yeah. It sounds like, you know, a lot of what you're doing, and it's certainly part and parcel what I often am working with couples on in couples therapy, is that idea of looking at a problem and experiencing it, even though it affects the two individuals very differently, looking at it as a joint problem rather than a problem that gets between them.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And sort of the idea of grief, we deal with a lot of intangible loss. Mm. So, you know, loss you can't necessarily see. And then I help them understand, you know, we go through the stages of grief, right? So denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance. And we often identify that each partner is grieving, but they may be grieving really differently. So if one person is in denial and avoiding the whole thing, but then one person is super depressed and having a hard time getting out of bed, that doesn't often align. And so what I'll do is help them see, well, actually, you're both grieving. You're doing it in different ways. But in fact, you are very aligned in your feelings. You're both mourning loss.
Yeah, yeah. That's, I met a couple, actually, I'm curious, because you're describing in, you know, in your intro, and we got, of course, the information from you and your website. You work with quite a variety of different sort of situations involving infertility. And I'm curious, you know, if there are some particular trends you notice in, you know, dealing with couples that are trying to biologically conceive, as opposed to couples who have decided they want to adopt or they want to try surrogacy, or I'm just curious if you could speak to any of those, the range of differences that you see.
Sure. Well, I mean, I think it really varies. So, you know, if you have a couple that maybe they've reached the end of the road with biology and they need to use alternate family building, whether that's surrogacy, which I guess would still be biology, but or adoption or donor. You know, if you have one couple that's not, or one person in the partnership that's not ready for that, maybe they really just wanted to family build in a traditional sense. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have one person that's ready to move forward in that way and one person that isn't, that's really tough. Mm-hmm. Because oftentimes you have to, you know, help someone understand the other's perspective, maybe wait for someone to catch up. And sometimes they don't end up aligning.
Yeah.
And that can be tough. And, you know, I would say one of the things that can certainly drive people apart. There's certainly ways to work through it, but it brings up a lot. Mm. And so that's tough. And then, you know, I'd say if you're undergoing fertility treatment, whether it's, you know, an IUI, which is less invasive, or IVF, which is more invasive, no one really sort of grows up and dreams about doing assisted reproductive technology to conceive. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe if you're in a same-sex couple, you know ahead of time, okay, if we want to conceive, we are going to have to use assistance. Yeah. So
we have some gay male friends who mentioned that they tried for a long time and it didn't work, so they decided they should adopt, you know. So.
Okay.
That's one of them is a comedian. That's one of his standing jokes. You know, he and his husband tried for a long time to get pregnant. It just didn't work. So they, you know.
Oh my gosh. processing that. Yeah.
It's early.
It's early.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's interesting though. I mean, I wonder, you know, under comedy, right, is pain sometimes. So mm-hmm.
Yeah, but oh, yeah. If you're in a homosexual couple, two men, you're not going to. I'm not going to conceive.
No, but it is interesting because there is, I've actually talked with gay men about that there is a sense of grief often there,
yeah,
as they're, particularly when they're coming out, and particularly when they're coming out to parents, for mm-hmm. example, that sense of, oh, you know, whatever my parents' dreams were, says the gay man, you know, about mm-hmm. having grandchildren the usual way sometime, that's not going to be the way it is. And that's occasion for grief, not only for the grandparents or the potential grandparents, but also for the man himself.
Sure. I mean, and I see that a lot too, both in hetero and homosexual couples, that guilt or shame about I'm letting my family down. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe I'm the only child and, you know, either, well, I can't pass on my biology because I have to use donor, or I can't have children and my parents are now being robbed of the opportunity to be grandparents. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of that often comes up in sort of this idea of letting people down.
Yeah. Wow. So that sense, you know, when you're working with folks, we had a, I'm sort of steering us in the direction of telling us some more about your experience of working with people doing surrogacy. Because that, we had a podcast a few months ago, whenever it was, mm-hmm. with a lawyer and a social worker. Who are in Vermont, where we are, who help folks dealing with that, along with other forms of what they call a collaborative reproduction, I think is the term they use. So
they were coming to it from a legal point of view.
Yeah, I'm just curious about your experience of working with folks who do surrogacy.
Surrogacy is complicated, I'd say, for multiple reasons. You know, number one, first and foremost, is the financial factor. Mm. You know, for so many people, that in itself makes it not accessible. They just can't, you know, unfortunately, you know, it's not covered. It runs usually in the six figures. And that in itself for a lot of people often makes it just not even able to be considered, which is, you know, so heartbreaking. I'd say the cases that often stay with me are the ones where people have to stop trying to family build because they can't afford it.
That's so also true of like IVF is very expensive too, isn't it?
Totally. Yeah. You know, in the time I've been in this field, which again has been about 6-7 years, which is crazy. Even longer if you count sort of when I was kind of just volunteering in it. We've had a ton of change in the United States in terms of coverage. More and more companies are getting on board with covering employees and understanding, you know, the benefits of covering both egg freezing for employees as well as fertility. So that's been huge. I mean, there's been a ton of strides, you know, more and more states are passing laws to legalize and, you know, the coverage of benefits, but there are still so many loopholes and more often than not, you know, people often aren't covered. I had, you know, on my own podcast actually this week, a woman come on who founded the CHIC Mission, which is an organization to provide funding for patients that are undergoing cancer treatment before preserving fertility. She started because she was diagnosed, didn't have coverage. Fortunately for her, she could afford to preserve her fertility, but that's not even a law. So, you know, there's so many loopholes. So that was a really long roundabout answer to your question about surrogacy, but so I would say first and foremost, the cost, you know, and that in itself is a stressor. Either people can't afford it, or maybe they have to think about asking family to help with it, which brings a whole host of emotions and difficulties. And then let's say we say, okay, we're moving forward, getting a surrogate. Then you move into either, you know, one, are we also grappling with it's a donor on both sides, a donor on one side in terms of the embryo. And what comes with that, you know, whether or not you're losing your biology. Then we come to the loss of not being able to carry and a lot of fear of not being able to attach to the baby. What if, you know, I don't feel involved in this, I don't feel a part of this, I don't even know how to explain to people, you know, I'm going to come home with a baby one day and my doorman's going to have no idea where it came from.
Because the doorman didn't see you pregnant, right? That's
exactly. Or, you know, I go to a regular yoga or Pilates class and we celebrate people's pregnancies because we see them progress, and I'm also pregnant in a sense along with these two other women in my class, and we're celebrating their milestones. I don't know how to say I'm also having a baby, but it's with a surrogate. You know, so there's so much taken away, right? The visual, you know, having a partner be involved with, you know, watching the belly grow and, you know, feeling it kick and move and going to all the appointments and feeling that attachment, you know, both as a partnership, watching a pregnancy grow and progress. And then the relationship with the surrogate and that, you know, you have to be willing to trust someone implicitly, right? Someone that you don't really know, that they're going to nurture and foster your baby for 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
And that I'm trusting someone to live a life that's a healthy lifestyle. That would be one that I would lead when I was pregnant. You know, you get into, I'm sure the lawyer covered, you know, there's so many legal nuances. What can and can't you dictate to a surrogate? You know, what's sort of the boundary of how much you can sort of play a role in their life and their choices? You know, so it's super complicated.
I hadn't thought about that, you know, because having been pregnant, you do develop that attachment while you're going through the pregnancy. And I'm sure it is different when you're having a surrogate do that. So that was something I hadn't even thought about.
Yeah. And keep in mind, for many people that end up using a surrogate, it's usually after quite a long journey with trying to conceive themselves. And so it's really the continued loss of anything tangible around a pregnancy. And so even if a surrogate does come to fruition, the surrogate's pregnant, the pregnancy progresses, it's still often really hard for people to, after so much trauma of trying to conceive, to actually believe it's happening and to feel attachment. It's your body is still the same.
That is interesting, isn't it? A lot of the attachment here, I'm not to mansplain to the two women who've actually been pregnant in the room, but there's that attachment, I would think. It's sort of the flip side of grief, that when you attach, you are risking grief. And when you've been through a long period of loss and you know, when it just hasn't been working out, that to attach to that, into it, to the baby growing in a surrogate would be a big risk. And that after a long period of trauma, you know, sort of month after month of trauma, that someone might well have a hard time doing that to protect themselves.
Sure. So that sense of failure on your part too, I'm sure you have to deal with that a lot.
I love the mansplaining. You can mansplain anytime.
I try to be sensitive to it because, you know,
Oh, you deal a lot with people too. So
yeah, let me explain to the two women.
you have standing because you deal with more couples than I do, certainly.
Well, yeah, sure.
That is probably not as many as
real. Yeah, I just have to be careful to recognize, you know.
That's true.
Because as if I had to tell the two women in the room, you know, men tend to do that. Have you ever heard of that before? You know, men, let me explain mansplaining to you, you know. Yeah,
I love it. I love it. No, that was great. And yeah, it's true. It's so much fear, right? So much fear about, is this actually happening? You know, again, usually it's after quite a long journey. And is this actually happening? And, you know, I've had clients that don't even, they won't order anything or prepare anything until like literally the day the surrogate goes into the hospital because yeah. They're so afraid of more heartbreak.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. And I hadn't thought of it before this conversation, but that phenomenon would make the attachment to the baby just different in some ways, and maybe even different from how it is in adoption, where that's a different thing too, right? Because I know when I've talked with a lot of adoptive parents, they don't know that the baby's available sometimes until literally the day of, they get the call. And so they haven't been thinking, oh, there's this baby that's, you know, in the cooker for us,
right? And it hasn't been gestating.
It's like all of a sudden, it's like, you know, we've been waiting 3 years and all of a sudden, oh, here's the call. We've got a baby for you. And so I'm imagining there's some interesting differences there too.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. And then you run into, you know, who's allowed in the delivery room, right? Are both parents involved? Is only the mother involved? You know, the father's not allowed in because the surrogate's not comfortable with that. So many different nuances to it.
Yeah. And then, you know, this is something I think as a naive outsider, I would wonder, and I think a lot of people who don't have a lot of familiarity with it wonder, I would worry if I hadn't read that, I don't think this is as big a problem as I think, but I'll say it anyway. I would worry that the surrogate might change your mind, you know, there, and then you have to deal. I remember the lawyer we were talking to, she was telling us about, you know, there's agreements that people make about that, but that doesn't mean that people don't change their minds. Do you run into that at all?
I have never run into a situation where that has happened.
Yeah, that's what they said too.
Yeah, she said they're very careful with the people they screen to become surrogates. So hopefully that.
I would say most people, at least from what I've seen, most surrogates are doing it either because they had their own journey and they really just want to give back and it's sort of this altruistic thing. And then, you know, a lot of times it's finances, you know, you get, and it's the opportunity to make some good money, which really helps them out. Maybe they have a family of their own and, you know, the opportunity to make, you know, some extra money is really helpful. But I would say most are really doing it because they also just genuinely want to help somebody else achieve that dream.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and if you should work with a good agency, and that's something that's super important, make sure you're working with a reputable agency because they will screen people and they will only accept people that, you know, are really doing it kind of for that reason.
So where do you come in the infertility journey? At what point do people seek you out?
Well, a lot of people say, ugh, I wish I had come to you 6 months ago.
That's exactly what I was thinking. It's like, I bet you hear that a lot.
I do yeah. hear that a lot.
You hear that a lot.
Well, what I hear a lot is I wish we'd come to you 6 years ago.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a different scenario.
I feel like having a therapist should just be a requirement of life, right? Just someone to kind of guide you along, be with you, right? You know, like going to the dentist every 6 months. Why is everyone not required to just check in with a therapist every
Yeah, I mean, I've heard that point of view. I tend to think, you know, it's interesting, Rena, because that so makes sense on the one hand. The funny thing is, in terms of my own work with couples, that wouldn't be fun for me. You know, to be somebody's like, just checking in, we're doing okay. I mean, I look, I'm happy to work with the people I work with, but I'd rather be working with them when they're having a problem.
Mm,
I mean, it feels, somehow it feels more.
Yeah.
I feel more needed that
way.
So
getting back to the question.
Anyway, getting back to the question.
At what point do people seek you out, or should they seek you out? Maybe I should say that.
So it depends. I mean, a lot of times people a friend might have told them word of mouth, and then they'll come to me and say, oh, you know, my friend saw a therapist, or they saw you and thought I should start talking to you. They'll come then, or maybe they've been in it for a long time and their mental health is really diminished and they're feeling super low. So then they on their own felt like they should seek help. Maybe they've started having a lot of problems in their partnership, need an outside perspective. So it really varies. It really varies. Maybe their physician.
They've already started the IVF journey.
Yeah, most people come to me when they're already in it. Although a fair amount, I would say, also come to me before they start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I imagine. Sure, that would help in terms of helping them make choices along the way. Like, should we go forward with this or that or either or whatever? I imagine.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think, you know, I live in New York City where it's very prevalent here, you know, fertility treatment. You know, I think demographically women here, you know, tend to start families later, just career, city life, et cetera. So right. I think, and there's a lot of people that are just super open about it. And so I think a lot of times people have just heard from friends how stressful it is. And, you know, New York too, a lot of my clients are, you know, amazing type A, super strong, successful women, and they really want to be on top of it. So they want to kind of get the support, you know, as they begin.
Yeah. Wow.
And I'm sure you also deal a lot with single women that want to get pregnant. Yes,
I do. A lot of single moms by choice who I just adore working with.
And what are some of the stresses that they're facing in this process?
Oh, gosh. You know, a lot of times it's sort of the loss of a partner and a fear of, well, no one will ever love me if I have a kid, or I'll never be able to find a partner. And sort of, okay, I'm up against the clock because I'm pushing, you know, whatever age, late 30s, mm-hmm. early 40s, and I don't want to lose out on having a child. But now I also feel like I'm losing out on having a partner. Mm. So a lot of processing that and helping them be where they're at, helping them find their power. I would say that's probably the most difficult challenge single moms by choice face.
It's interesting because I hadn't thought of that particular angle on it. I've worked with some single moms who were single moms by choice, you know, and using donor sperm or some other sort of reproductive technology. Hadn't occurred to me that part of what they're having to deal with is, as you point out, you know, not only am I you know, making a child without having a partner to help with, but also possibly making it much harder to find a partner if I ever want one, mm-hmm. because a lot of partners don't want to have somebody with a kid.
Right. But then I help them perspective change, mindset shift, and recognize their own power and how amazing that is to just live your life. How powerful is that? Mm-hmm. To just live, you know, and not wait for somebody else. Because I'm sure you see this too, and I see this a lot in my office. Then you get couples that they got together, there were a lot of issues, but they felt they had to be with someone to have a child. Now they have kids and they can't stand each other.
Yeah.
And they can't do that at the beginning.
That's a chunk of my living right there. I do see that a lot. And it's also interesting because, you know, I remember, how many years ago was this where there was some, back in the days of Time magazine, where there was some cover that basically was saying that the odds of a 40-something woman finding a single 40 something woman finding a partner were like incredibly small.
Yeah.
That turned out to be wrong, and very wrong even then, and even more wrong now. And so a lot of those worries that single women would express about that probably aren't as realistic as they fear. That, you know, just realistically, people can find partners in all sorts of situations for good or ill, but mm-hmm. it's not like they're taking themselves completely out of that possibility by having a child.
Totally. And I mean, this is a podcast, not a therapy session. So, I mean, this is certainly my own personal bias coming in as a single mom. But, you know, again, the single moms by choice I work with, I just find to be some of the most empowering, inspirational women, you know, go out there, do it. And I think that's the blessing that we have today, both as women and men, the opportunity to preserve fertility, to family build without having to be in a partnership. You can choose to be in a partnership, but you can have a child as a homosexual couple, as a single person, as a heterosexual couple. There's so many options, and that's amazing. You know, we have the power of choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting because when I was young, back in the Lincoln administration, well, not quite that far back, but you know, the we wouldn't speak of choice about that. There were lots of single parents even then, but it was nobody would ever say it was by choice.
Right.
It was by circumstance that always had this sort of sense of by tragic circumstance. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, you broke up, or oh, he left you, or whatever, you know, whatever the situation was. Yeah. And so people are able to recognize that these single moms have always existed. And now at least there's starting to be some recognition that it's legit. It's always been legit, but it wasn't always recognized as legit. Mm-hmm. And now it is.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, is there anything else that we should know or we should be asking you about or things that we've forgotten or left out?
I think you did a great job. I mean, I think with even listening, it's just so important to know, you know, family building, you know, whatever that means for you can be very stressful. And so I think it is super important to seek help, you know, whether it's a therapist, a support group, whatever, but to know that you're not alone. And to also know too, I think it's important to show, research also shows, if you don't address this now, meaning when you're going through it, it's going to crop up years from now, you know, that PTSD, that trauma, those feelings. So, you know, it's very important to address it from the beginning to set yourself up for success later on.
Yeah. Tell folks about your book and how they can get in touch with you. And actually, why don't you tell us about the book? We haven't asked you about it. I know authors never want to talk about their own books, but in just in case you do, tell us about your book.
Okay, sure. Well, so it's my pandemic project. So I always say when everyone else was watching Tiger King, I was working every night in that book. It was totally my labor of love. And it's just sort of a culmination of my years, you know, and sample size of working with, you know, literally thousands of people and feeling like I was having the same conversation over and over. And I'm all about efficiency and streamlining. So I was like, let me just put this in a book because it's what I cover, you know, with everyone. So it's on Amazon. Mm-hmm. I think it's sort of just kind of all your questions answered, a lot of mindfulness exercises, tools. So I think it's a great place to start for both someone going through treatment or if you want to help a family member or friend understand what you're going through.
So if someone goes to Amazon and searches for Rena Gower Infertility 101,
it will pop up. Guide, yes.
Yeah. And I'll bet just Infertility 101 with your name will do it. Right. Does that sound right?
That sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, great. Yeah. So they can do that. And is there a website? I think there's renagower.com. Yes.
Yeah.
I think I saw that. Yeah.
I have a website. I am not active on Instagram. That is one of those things I think about every night. And then it's just so against how
just
I
just like one more thing,
you know, and I like to be present and to be in the moment. So I have one, you can message me there, but I don't really actively post inspirational things, but no, I am thinking them all the time and sending them out there to everybody.
Yeah. But if there are folks who are seeing this and want to actually make use of your services, they could do that by going to your website. Is that how they should do
exactly.
that?
Exactly. Yeah. You could go to my website. There's a contact form on there. Shoot me a message, or that's the best way to get in touch. Absolutely.
Well, great. Thank you so much, Rena. This was very informative and thank you.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's always such a pleasure to be on the other side of a podcast.
Indeed.
So thank you.
Well, we hope you enjoyed that interview with Rena. And if you or if you know someone going through infertility problems, I recommend Rena's book that she talked about, Infertility 101, or you can go to her website and get more information there.
And it's very common, as she pointed out. Mm-hmm. This is not a rare problem at all.
Yeah.
And it is very stressful.
Many people who've been through it.
Oh yeah, and it does a number on couples. So a good idea to get some help from an experienced person.
Absolutely.
So before we close, let's just briefly put in our usual plugs for our stuff. You know what I'm going to say right now? I'm going to say, you know, I realize when people watch or engage with podcasts, they don't always get this far.
That's true.
So I'm going to say, I'm not going to offer a prize yet. I'm not going to be that ridiculous. But if you are actually hearing this or seeing this, drop us a line. Go to ctn7.com and just say, I saw the stuff at the end, just to let us know that we're not just, you know, sort of saying all this stuff at the end. And we know lots of people see the beginning and lots of, because we get feedback.
Right.
But I'm really curious, if you're really one of those folks that actually heard us all the way to the end, just tell us. I don't even think we have to do any other plugs than that. I think that'll do us today.
Sounds good.
And so, until next time.
Remember, be kind.
Don't panic.
And have faith.